everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable number 236. Today we're going to be talking about Angel, Season 4, Episode 1, Deep Down, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 7, Episode 3, Same Time, Same Place. I'm your host, Karen, haven't been here in a while, superfan, joined by fellow superfan Natalie, and newbies Brittany and Danielle. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hello.
As usual, if you'd like to get into contact with us, you can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable, find us on this post on hypeable.com, or go to rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And we're going to kick this off with some fun facts. Hope you guys came prepared. Danielle, I think you should go first.
Oh, crap. I was hoping I would go first. So, because I'm on here 2 weeks in a row, I'm going to piggyback off of my fun fact from last week and say that Karen and Kristen came to visit me for my birthday last weekend, and we saw Trevor Noah's stand-up show in downtown Chicago, and I considered it a personal birthday gift to myself that half of his routine or half of his set was taco-related. And so I was laughing about tacos with Trevor Noah for like a good hour. That's a fun fact.
That was pretty great. I got a t-shirt that says, I may be drunk, but I'm not stupid. Nobody else finds that funny. Okay. Thanks, guys.
I mean, it's funny as a concept, but is it from something? Like,
I don't know. I just thought it applied to my life.
Oh, boy.
Anyway. All right, Brittany, what's your fun fact?
Oh, okay. That was a segue. That wasn't a segue.
Nope. I don't do segues.
I did not find your joke funny. That's my fun fact. Oh. No, I'm kidding.
That really hurts. Great fun fact, Brittany.
Yeah. I don't have any fun facts because this weekend I'm doing absolutely nothing and it's so wonderful and I'm not thinking about anything and I'm not doing anything work related except podcasting and you know, we're in a rush, so we got to get going. Let's go.
All right, Natalie, what about you?
Well, my fun fact that is this time in 2 weeks, I will be in Hawaii for an 11-day vacation, but The fun fact is that I don't know how that's going to go for me because yesterday it's warming up here in Australia and into summer, and we went to the beach for the first time this summer with a guest of ours, and Leo and our guest went and sat on the beach and went in the water, and I sat on the concrete on a chair in the shade without touching any sand. So I don't know how much value this Hawaii vacation is going to have for me. I have to sort of get into the mode of like being prepared to touch sand and be dirty and not, and like be outdoors and be in the sun. Because this weekend that didn't go so well for me. So it's going to be interesting.
Luckily Hawaii has like really beautiful like forests and, you know, like there's a lot of other stuff to do than beaches. Yeah. So that's good. My fun fact is Buffy related in that I'm dressing up as Dark Willow this year. So
for
that's
Halloween.
So that's going to be interesting. It's not going to be a perfect match, but I'm going to have a veiny face and dress in all black. And I even have a copy of Willow's Grimoire, which I recently reviewed on Hypeable. So that was, you know, kismet. So I'm going to be lugging that around for the night.
What are you doing for Halloween?
Throwing a party in 2 hours.
So that's what's happening tonight.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. It should be fun. Making lots of things to eat and a purple alcoholic drink that looked awesome. Hopefully I can pull it off. And should be cool. I'll take pictures and we can put them up on the Rewatchable Twitter for my embarrassment, because why not?
What's good, Kristen gonna be for Halloween?
I think she's gonna be a cat. Mm-hmm. So she could be my familiar. Actually, that's pretty good. I'm going to tell her that.
Oh, boy.
All right. Let's jump into Angel. Feels weird to be doing Angel first, but we're going to do Angel 401 Deep Down. In this episode, Angel, the show, is finally back on track as Wesley tortures the woman who slit his throat until she leads him to where they dropped off Angel at sea. In other news, Wes is also still sleeping with Lila, and against all my better judgment, I am kind of into it. Meanwhile, back at the farm, Fred and Gunn, I almost said Fred and George, are holding down the fort at Angel Investigations while babysitting Connor, the demon brat. But all hell breaks loose at the hotel when Wesley shows up with Angel because it's time to sit down. Daddy's home. Haven't we warned Ariana we can't use the F word? We try not to use the F word.
Oh, are we? Whoops.
I mean, we try. We usually don't succeed. But what did you guys think of the cold open for this episode? It was really cool until it got super depressing, but Angel creates this sort of Thanksgiving fantasy in his mind. Oh. All of his friends are there. Wesley's there. Lauren is there. He's making googly eyes at Cordy, and Connor's like, stop it. You guys are so gross. And it's all warm and fuzzy until it all goes to hell. So, yeah. Newbies, did you think that everything was fine and dandy?
Somehow we'd gotten to this.
No, I knew it was a dream or a hallucination pretty much immediately. Mm. Partially because I've seen the Vampire Diaries, which did this in its, like, I don't even know, like, fourth season or something. And partially because my brain went to, wait, a Thanksgiving scene? No, that wouldn't happen yet. This show started like in October. So my brain was confused about like the timing of like when the episode would air too. So I was like, no, this has to be not real.
That thought crossed my mind as well, to be honest. What about you, Brittany? Did you have hope?
No, because then it would be too wonderful and then I would quit Angel. However, I could not for the life of me, because we've been watching Buffy for, I don't know, 7 weeks straight, what was going on with Angel, because I watched Angel and then I watched, like, you know, 8 Buffy episodes and we finally got back to Angel and I was like,
4.
It was a lot because we took a week off. Okay. So 3 weeks with no Angel. Yeah, yeah, I forgot what we were doing. So I'm like, well, what is actually going on? And then the water started coming in and I'm like, oh, right. He's at the bottom of the ocean. So it was, a good teaser, because it took me the entire teaser to remember what the hell was going on with this show.
It was cute. It was very cute.
It was super cute in the beginning, and it gave me hope for like what all of this could be if they led a normal life. And it's like really adorable, except no, like that fantasy ran out really quick. And unfortunately, Angel is still at the bottom of the ocean. Fred and Gunn are now running Angel Investigations. Connor lives with them and he goes out on missions with them, but he's not very good at it. Or maybe that's on purpose, because he's trying to stop them from discovering what's going on with Angel, even though they've kind of got, you know, their sights set on finding him and discovering what happened.
Mm.
And that's when Connor accidentally kills one of their only leads they've had in 3 months. So we know that the show is
accidentally
kills her. And they're not too happy about it, but he's pretty good at covering it up.
I think there's a reluctance to believe. From anyone. I think there's a reluctance to believe how bad a kid can be, mm-hmm. if you know what I mean. I think that there is, even myself watching this episode, when I saw some of the interactions later on, like when Fred and Gunn come after him, when they discover the truth, I'm like, no, he's just a kid. And I'm like, and I had to be like, no. He has full culpability here. Like, even though I freaking hate this kid as well, but I'm still, your mind is still like, no, he doesn't deserve that. That's not fair. He's a kid. That's not true in this circumstance. And But I think that it allows him to get, you know, to have got away with that so long because of the lack of suspicion or the automatic, like, oh, you can't really believe that a kid would be that, you know, consciously bad. But he is.
Yeah, nobody wants to believe that a kid is that bad, but you also have to remember he grew up in hell dimension. So his ideas are very warped by that experience, and it sucks, you know, not being able to trust Angel's son, but he's definitely not on the right path right now. So that makes sense. And, you know, they really don't know what happened to Angel or Cordy, and they're hoping that they can figure something out, but all of their leads keep dying, and Lauren is not being helpful at all. And this makes me really mad. You know, Lauren's just off in Vegas and all of that. Are you guys mad at him as well? Or do you not really care that he's kind of off to the side?
I was pissed at him the whole time, from even before we saw him on screen pick up the phone. I was thinking, oh, maybe someone is like screening his calls. Maybe he doesn't know what's going on. But then he picks up the phone and is speaking like everything is fine and he's not there. He's not worried. It seems really strange. And I was really mad at him.
He's being a lot harsher than I would have ever expected he was capable of. And a lot more self-serving than I ever would have expected he was capable of. But I don't know, maybe it kind of speaks for his care for Angel or whatever, but it's still pretty, it seemed a bit out of character.
To play devil's advocate, I think you're right for the Lorne that we've been seeing most recently, but before that, Lorne has always sort of been a neutral party in a lot of ways.
Yeah,
you just look at the way that his bar was set up and everything, and he's always been one to help where he can, but never to really step in and do the job himself. And that's just kind of the way that he exists. That being said, especially recently with him living there and being a greater part of everything that's been going on, it does kind of suck that he's doing his shows in Vegas while they have no idea where Angel is. And granted, they don't know that Angel's in danger or anything like that. I mean, most likely that is the case, but he could be off doing whatever and Lauren is just, you know, maybe he's trying not to think that something is so wrong with Angel. But that's kind of naive too. Somebody who is looking for Angel, however, is Wesley, interestingly enough. And in the meantime, when he's not doing that, he's having a lot of sex with Lila. And this is a repeat offense. Can we say that? I think we can say that. I don't think they're really in a relationship, but they're definitely going steady at something.
I think that it's interesting. The Lila thing, I mean, there's more of it later, you know, when she talks to the people at Wolfram and Hart about it. It's still got a few too many feelings for my liking involved. Mm-hmm. A few too many. And I don't know how I feel about him keeping a girl locked in the closet with a bucket to poop in.
Yeah. I've got some questions about Wesley, which we'll get to in a minute. But their relationship, like, they don't trust each other. And they both are always on guard with each other. And yet, I think you're right. I think there are some feelings there. And I don't know if it's just because they know exactly who the other person is. They don't have to put on a mask or anything, and it just works. But it's definitely a strange pairing. Adriana's into it. Is anybody else into it?
Kind of. I don't know. So the first time when they did it, it was very uncomfortable and I very much wanted to scream at my television. But this time, I mean, in the bad way, I wanted to scream in the bad way. But it felt very different this time. Just like Natalie said, you could feel something else happening there. because, I mean, Wesley did not immediately jump out of the bed. Like, they held on to each other and cuddled. And it was a sort of, I guess, happiness is maybe too strong a word, but it was like something that I had wanted to see for Wesley because he's been just so beaten, that it made me feel good that he was like weirdly happy in this way, or like not feeling terrible for a hot second. I don't know. So I could be into it.
It's, I don't know, it's very weird. Like, what, and what Karen said about that they don't trust each other and stuff. I don't know, to me, kind of, maybe they kind of do, or they don't realize they do. And that the whole, oh, you're a thing, you know, you're a person that I hate and I don't trust is like part of the attraction for them. But it's sort of a role play almost. And given what Lila kind of, I think I'm coloring this a lot by like what, how she acts later. But I don't know. I think there is more trust and loyalty there than you would have expected.
Yeah. The part where she tells Linwood, like, I'm not sleeping with him to get information out of him, to use him. Like, what I do in my personal time is my business. That did surprise me a little bit. I was like,
yeah.
Okay, so she's being a little protective over this. I still think that, you know, it's really messed up, the whole situation, and that her feelings, she's a very cold person. So even if she does have feelings, I don't think she has feelings the same way everybody else does. But that was interesting. And I mean, now, what are we going to do now? Because she killed Linwood. She decapitated him. She took over. So do you think that's going to make things easier for Wesley, for the others? Or do you think that it's going to be a lot more complicated now?
Well, Linwood was afraid of them, is what she kind of got into. And we've seen that she is not. So I think it might be more complicated for them in the way that she will never stop kind of coming after them. But I also think that she'll have more of a interest in what they're doing and perhaps be not helpful, but be more involved.
Do you think, you know, this whole thing for her, this softening or whatever, do you think that that's like, is it like, oh, she was a strong girl and now she has feelings? Or do you think it's well balanced?
I think it's well balanced. I think she is still very much a surprise a lot of the time with like the power that she actually has. Like we've seen a few times where she's done things to like show how much power she has that have been surprising. And like this with decapitating Linwood was one of those things. And so I don't think that her potentially having feelings would mess with that too much, just because she has been a bit of a surprise. Like we don't know her as well as we think we do.
That's always fair for any of the bad guys to always be on your guard, because I mean, we've seen plenty of people at Wolfram and Hart, or a couple at least, kind of go soft, and even her in some cases, and then come back from that. So it's, you never really know which version you're going to get of Lila. That's how I always feel when I'm dealing with her, when we see her on the screen. And I just hope that Wesley remembers that as well. And I think he does. I think he's got, you know, a good head on his shoulders despite being in the place that he's in right now. But he's also got a lot of other stuff he's dealing with on the side, which includes having a girl in the closet and with only a bucket to go to the bathroom in. And, you know, that's a big question right there, because Justine isn't exactly innocent. You know, she's done some pretty terrible things, but does she deserve this?
Yeah, that was, again, like, both the response to Justine and to Connor in this episode, I both had the same intrinsic reaction, I think, of seeing, you know, our good guy characters act so, like, cruelly. Mm-hmm. That I was like, oh, I think it's less about what maybe the bad guys deserve and more about how you'd hope the good guy would act, if you know what I mean. And there's the response to both Justine and Connor in this episode sees the good guys acting in ways that we, you know, you'd hope they'd be above. But I don't know, maybe this dark Wesley is I just keep juxtaposing him to the Wesley that you first met in Buffy.
Oh, God, and so different.
Oh my gosh.
It's two different so characters. Weird.
It's so weird. And I don't know, it's just still quite an abrupt change. Like, you know, it's obviously been growing, but this, like, you know, post-apocalyptic Wesley or whatever. I mean, not genuinely post-apocalyptic, but you know, metaphorically post-apocalyptic is just, I don't know, like, is this a reveal of what he was always like but sort of didn't know how to act on or didn't know how to be confident, or has, like, something snapped in him? Because this is, it's ruthless and it's, I don't know, it's some people really love it. I don't know if I love it. But it's very interesting for sure, and kind of striking. So I don't know what to think. His dedication to get Angel back was, you know, nice, but also sort of, given that he did cause the Connor situation in the first place, it's sort of like, I guess, like his duty to do something.
That's what I was going to ask, because obviously Wesley is in a very dark place, but he does go out of his way to save Angel. I think part of that is because he cares. Part of it is also self-serving. He does want to kind of be back in that circle in a lot of ways. So I don't know. How did you take it? Do you think that it was genuine what he was doing, or do you think this is kind of a means to an end for him? Brittany, what about you?
I don't think it was a means to an end. I think he wanted to do it, get Angel back, and then he leaves. He doesn't stick around. Sure, Lila tortures him the whole time that they're on the boat, being like, they're never going to take you back. But that doesn't even really seem to phase him. I mean, he thinks about it. He digests what she says, but then he just leaves. He doesn't try to make any effort to get back into the group. He drops Angel off and on his way he goes. So maybe eventually that is the end goal, but right now I think he's making atoning for whatever sin he's dealing with and not recognizing that he's seeking a reward.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. That's definitely fair.
He still has a relatively good moral compass. He does get there in not so great ways, but like finding Angel, who he still considers a friend or like at least someone he cares about, it's the right thing to do. And I mean, I guess I probably wouldn't want to stick around in a place where I'm really not wanted all that much either.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what was he going to do? Stand there and be like, I've saved him, so now everything's great. Or like, where's breakfast? Like, that's not going to happen. So
time for pancakes.
Exactly. I don't think that was even in the realm of possibility. And he's smart enough to know that that's not it either. So doing something good and backing off was probably the best thing he could have done in that situation. Yeah. It just sort of stinks that the others didn't see it that way.
Yeah, that was the thing. Like, even if he was trying to do them a favor by getting out of their hair, it did not come off that way. And you could tell that Fred and Gunn were upset about it.
That really, honestly, that surprised me, because I feel the same way. Like, I feel like if you turn up with Angel and then you're like, here's Angel, I'm good now, where's my reward of love and friendship? You know, rather than what he's doing, whether it's an act or whether it's honest or whatever, what he's done is, here, I've done the thing to try and make it better. I expect nothing. I just wanted to do this, if you know what I mean. And that is much higher moral ground than, you know, expecting something in, mm-hmm. in return. And so I was surprised. I was surprised, like, at the negative reaction to that, that they wouldn't be like, oh, so honorable, I see what he's doing here. But Fred and Gunn are kind of, they're being a bit dumb, to be honest. And Yeah.
We'll see. You can really compare it with Spike in this moment too, because Spike does come back expecting for his reward for being better now. You know, that this is exactly what Buffy wanted and everything's going to be fine. And, you know, it doesn't work out for him very well either. So I can see how Wes is taking, you know, the higher moral ground. But at the same time, I don't think Fred and Gunn are being stupid. I think that their feelings are hurt. And I think that they're seeing somebody do the right thing and coming back into their life momentarily and then walking away with this attitude of like, you don't mean anything to me anymore. Like, I just did my duty and now I'm gone. So I could see how that would kind of rankle the situation. But either way, this obviously exposes Connor as the person who did this to Angel. And let's just talk about Fred, because, oh man, I loved when she took him out. She was such a good actress in there, giving him the sandwich and, you know, pretending everything was fine. And then she just gets pissed.
I had to do a double take. I hated this.
You hated this? Why? Yeah.
Why? So I don't like lying. I don't like things being convoluted. I don't like manipulation. And I was just like, I would have just stormed in there and yelled. Like, I didn't like the act. I was like,
that's yeah, but Connor's too strong. He would have just beat her up and ran away.
Still, I would have taken that. Like, not for her. Like, I would have not even counted that in for me. I don't know. It just, as a character choice, I just hate people that act like this, full stop. So I really hated it.
That's fair. I mean, I don't like manipulation either when it's done to me, but this was awesome and I really loved it. So they do tie up Connor and try to figure out what's going on with him. And that's when Angel comes in. Daddy's home. And it's Connor tries to escape and Angel just tells him to sit down. And this was such a strong moment for Angel, especially because he's so weak. Like, he just had human blood, which is obviously going to help quite a lot. But even after Connor leaves, you can tell how weak Angel is. And my question always is, like, why didn't Connor try to fight his way out of there? He probably would have been able to win.
Because maybe deep down, Angel's son is still there. And maybe that's what they're looking for. I don't know. Because, I was wondering the same thing.
I think that he is probably quite conflicted over, like, I don't think he's a full sociopath. That's the thing. I don't think he's a full, every single thing he's done has been an act. I think that he has compartmentalized quite a lot in terms of, like, how especially, you know, maybe Fred and Gunn treat him as looking after him. And, you know, even some of the times with Angel, like, I feel like that there have been ups and downs with his relationship with Angel where it's been genuine, like, and that it has not every second of the day been a manipulation. I think it's been a conflict and a compartmentalization of his feelings about different people, like about Holtz and about everything that's happened to him, as opposed to straight up, you know, acting the entire time. And so, you know, Fred is, they've been good to him. They've had, you know, they've taken care of him. They've had no reason to, you know, he has no reason to really have anything against them. And maybe he knows that. Like, maybe he's like, well, actually, like, they thought that I was good and they've been really good to me. And I don't know, maybe there's some of that being like, I don't know, some guilt or some disconnect there, but maybe not. Maybe he is that bad. I don't know.
I would hope that he could see Fred and Gunn and know that they have his best interests in heart and all of that. He's obviously got something against his father, which is left over from Holtz. And I mean, you can hold it against him, but that's how he was brought up. So that's what it is. But with Fred and Gunn and all of the others, I mean, even Cordelia, like, he really liked Cordelia. They all treated him well. They all tried to come at him with love and respect, and he pushed back against that, but they ultimately stuck around, which means a lot. So I think he is looking for a family, especially now that Holtz is gone, and he's found it here with good people. And I think he does want to do the right thing, but at the end of the day, that thing with Angel is always going to kind of be there. And Angel is very angry at the moment, but he also needs to know, okay, what did you do to Cordelia? And that's when Connor says, nothing. I didn't do anything to her. And I really liked Angel's reaction to this because he was like, I believe you, but you still have to leave. And I think that is going to make a big impact on Connor just because, you know, he didn't really punish him. I mean, I guess sending him away is punishing him, but he didn't try to kill him or anything. He's just saying, okay, what you did sucked. I'm mad. And also I need to like go drink some blood right now. But ultimately he still loves him.
I think that he maybe understands Connor's level of vengeance if what Connor had believed to be true was really true. Right. Like, he kind of understands how someone got to that point, you know, with Holtz and everything. Like, I think that, you know, there was a period of genuine, you know, like, he was with Angel. He was trying to understand more about Angel. You know, he learned more maybe about the circumstances about, you know, Angel and Angelus, like the difference there with, you know, what he'd done in the past. And he was sort of almost there, and then getting that, you know, Holtz getting killed by Angel is, you know, tipped him right back into vengeance. And I think Angel probably understands how you would get to that if that was true, but obviously it's not true. So, yeah, it's, you know, kind of messy. But, yeah, I don't know. I think that would be a big part of it. But I don't know what Angel thinks Connor is going to do out in the world on his own now. Well,
he's resourceful at least, so he could probably scrounge something together. But I want to know, Danielle and Brittany, do you think Connor is redeemable? Do you think he's going to come back? Do you think that, you know, this is the end of the story here? What do you think is going on?
Well, first of all, he was added to the opening credits, which I was not happy about. They added him in. They took out Angel's, like, backhanded twirl slap from, like, the first or second season, which I loved. And it synced with the music so well. And they took that out and they put this kid in. So I'm assuming he is not going anywhere.
Your priorities are brilliant. I love this.
And I guess besides my dislike for children of characters in media like this in general, I think he could be redeemable in the eyes of the show. I think it could happen, especially considering his slight reactions that he had to Angel's just like laying out the truth calmly to him. He seemed surprised almost, even though his face didn't change too much. So I think he will probably be ripe for the show to redeem. I just don't know if I am going to like him at all, ever.
I definitely don't like him. And I agree with Danielle. I don't think I will ever like him. But I hope that he doesn't pull all the focus and we just get these cuts to Wesley, because I feel like that's what's going to happen. We're just going to forget about Wes for a while, and it's going to be the Connor show, which is incredibly irritating. But I'm also kind of interested in how they're going to balance this new character with the whatever impending apocalypse is never coming, because Wolfram and Hart is the most disorganized unit to ever exist. So they don't really care. Like, they care about this apocalypse and Angel's role in it, but not enough to like
do anything in three seasons about it. So I'm curious what role, if any, Connor will play into that, because I'm sure that there's still something going on there where, you know, they probably misread something and then that's how they get Wes back. But I hope not. He's so annoying right now. And the fact that I watched Mad Men and loved Mad Men is really just
hard. Do you know who he is? Like, yeah, that's because
he looks exactly the same. Like, it's hard not to know
about this yet. So yeah, it's kind of weird. Yeah.
Also, like, Pete on Mad Men sucks so much. So it's like really not a stretch for me to hate him so much as Connor.
That's pretty funny.
It's for me, it's really interesting watching this right now at this point in my life and my relationship with the media, because yes, this character is very hated. Like, people, in the same way that people did not like the Dawn introduction and Dawn's presence, Connor is probably more hated than that. But right now, in the new season of Supernatural, they've introduced a young character like this, and everyone is shocked out of their minds by how good he is and how much everyone likes him. Like, immediately, everyone thought they were going to be like, oh, what is this? It is the most universally loved choice that this show has made in probably a decade. And it's very, and it just goes, I think it goes to show in how carefully you do it, because it is like what Danielle said, that whole, like, you know, young character, particularly, like, you know, someone that doesn't know the, you know, world around them, or is like a blank slate, like, you know, this character on Supernatural was born and grew into adulthood immediately and, like, knows nothing about the world. And that is so annoying usually, and it is such an easy out and such a desperate dynamic shift usually. And Supernatural is nailing it in a way that I am, like, shocked out of my mind about. And watching this Connor story play out, like, in the same time that this story is playing out on Supernatural, like, kind of week to week, is like the biggest juxtaposition in the world, and it's so weird. But yeah, it's Connor is we're stuck with him at least as long as you keep spotting him in the opening credits, we're stuck with him.
Yeah.
So,
well, at least one thing that's got, you know, that he's got going for him is that he didn't do anything to Cordelia. So there's that. But also, Cordelia is now very bored as a higher being. So that was a funny ending to the episode. And I just wanted to know if you guys had any projections for what do you think is going to happen next with her, or even what she's doing up there, just chilling, just watching over things.
It's just weird. I don't know. I mean, they're obviously going to bring her back. I never had a doubt about that. I question how much actual sight she has up there, because if she was able to see all of the things that were going down, we wouldn't have seen a clip of her being, like, bored. We would have seen a clip of her being, like, frustrated.
Yeah, like, oh my God, let me out. I need to save Angel from the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. And that wasn't, like, being a higher being, I would think that she would have had the ability to do things like that. So I'm assuming she's going to come back, and I'm assuming it's going to be like, what the hell happened? Or I don't know, but it's just weird. I don't know what she's doing there, and it doesn't seem like she's a higher being, because she doesn't have this sort of sight or anything, really.
Yeah. You got any guesses, Brittany?
No, I mean, right now, I didn't even think Cordelia was going to be in this season, to be completely honest, because I was like, oh, that was some way to write off this actress. So seeing her up there and being bored, first of all, felt very much like Buffy Cordelia, where it's just like, oh, I'm bored. You guys are all awful. Like, I hope we don't go back to that kind of character. But also, if she does come back, the Thanksgiving scene definitely solidified that I don't want them to be together, because if that's how they're going to behave, I won't be able to handle it. Like, it's cute when they're friends and, like, half flirting, but in a platonic way, like, where nothing's going to happen. Need, like, the tension. Yeah, and if they're going to be together, that's going to be horrible.
I'm sure there are plenty of other things that will make their life horrible just to give it that tension. All right, let's jump into favorite scenes now. I kind of already talked about mine. I just really love Fred being a badass, not only when she took out Connor, but also when she was taking out the vampires and she had her secret weapon, the stake up her sleeve and everything. I just thought she was really kick-ass this episode. What about you, Natalie?
My favorite scene was the ending scene. I did not like much of this, like, sort of tone and stuff. This episode only really kicked into me as good when Connor came back to, when Angel confronted Connor at the house, so at the hotel. So that whole sit down scene and him basically reading Connor, like, about all his nonsense, and just so calm and so, yeah, you know, commanding. And I just really loved that whole scene. And, you know, it was not particularly threatening. It was just so authoritative and spelled out just how bad it all was. And I really, really, you know, with a few twinges of Angel's beautiful humor in there as well. So that whole confrontation I really loved in terms of in terms of this episode. This episode was also written for I know in the doc I think Ariana said that she liked this episode better than any in a while. This is the first episode of Angel written by this particular writer who had already been writing on Buffy, and it's the same writer that wrote Seeing Red and wrote a few other pretty tense Angel Buffy episodes. So yeah, he is now, you know, you'll see more of his episodes now on Angel, but this was his first introduction. Stephen DeKnight, who I think is actually becoming a pretty big writer and director in Hollywood recently. Yeah. He got announced for something quite big, but this is the first Stephen DeKnight episode of Angel. So if there was any tone stuff in here that stuck out to you, it's that, basically.
I can get behind that. Yeah, he's pretty cool. Yeah. Danielle, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene is actually Lila in the boardroom. I liked that surprise switch that she had, because she went in there, she looked really nervous. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as things started, she turned the tables on her higher up and made one quip about, like, a cool chair that, like, one of the board members or whatever had come up with. And then all of a sudden just, like, decapitates the guy. Yeah. And it was very unexpected, but it was something I could really get behind.
Cool. Brittany?
Mine was Wes and Justine on the boat when they were playing, like, who behaved the worst in season 3. They're like, oh, well, I did this. Oh, well, I did this. Oh, well, you kidnapped his son. Oh, well, you followed Holtz. And so that was kind of enjoyable. It was like, you both suck. Why do we have to have this recap?
And going to favorite lines, mine came at the end of Angel when Angel says, I love you, Connor. Now get out of my house. Because, again, I just feel like that was the best thing Angel could have done. Mm. What about you, Natalie?
Mine was there's quite a few throughout this whole scene that I love. That was one of them. Straight up sit down was one of them. If you're going to take a serious note, what I deserve is open to debate, because Angel is always so conscious and guilty about his, you know, his redemption and that kind of thing. But I will say that as a humor, moment. I did, like, what you did to me was unbelievable, Connor. But then I got stuck in Hell Dimension by my girlfriend one time for 100 years. So 3 months under the ocean actually gave me perspective, kind of M.C. Escher perspective. But I did get time to think. I just really love him. Like, and yeah, I just really love him. Angel, I miss you, Angel. I love you.
I think Danielle liked this scene too.
Yeah.
I did. I couldn't pick just like one thing, but like this one portion just spoke to me. And I think it's Connor sort of interrupts and Angel just goes, "Daddy's not finished talking." Or it's after Connor tries to leave and Angel does not let him.
Yeah.
And he says, "Daddy's not finished talking." I was like, here we go.
This was a great scene for David Boreanaz. Like, he's like, this is up there for him. It's so good. So, yeah.
Brittany?
Mine was the Lorne hallucination scene where Justine is still rambling on and on about how no one will ever forgive you, Wesley. Look at him. He's dying and he's out of his mind. And Wes is trying to figure out what to do. And Lorne is there talking to Angel, being like, you want a bitch slap sourpuss over there for practice? I'll be your cheering section. And even in a hallucination, like, Lorne just lays it down. And I like that Lorne was the person who was there because Angel knows that he's not around anymore, and it's sort of like him calling him up almost as like a comforting figure because of everything else that's going on. I just like that it was Lorne who was there.
Yep. All right, let's jump into Buffy the Vampire Slayer, episode 703 now. Same time, same place. And this episode, Willow comes back, but no one can see her, and she can't see them until Anya helps restore vision through the power of friendship. A couple of talking points before we get into the plot details of the episode. Brittany, obviously, we want to know where Giles is, as do you. How upset were you?
I just don't understand. Why bring him back, film on his property, you know, do the whole shebang, and then he just doesn't come back? Season 7 is testing me already, and it's only episode 3.
At least we saw him a little bit. Not in this episode, but the beginning of the season.
Yeah, so it was just such a triumphant moment for Buffy, but like I said last week, really high highs and really low lows with this show.
Yeah, that's fair. Danielle is disappointed for another reason.
Well, okay. Yeah, I guess I did put the word disappointing in here, but it kind of makes me sound like a terrible person. But I was actually, last week I was saying how I really enjoyed the openers of the first two episodes with the, I guess, sort of random murders of girls. But I liked them because it was something that Buffy hadn't done before, and it was an interesting, it was an interesting way to get you thinking about, oh, I wonder what's going on this season, in every episode. But like, you kind of forget about it, and then you go back into the next one, and it's like, oh yeah, this is something that's happening.
So, yeah, this episode very admittedly did not have anything in it that teased the myth arc of this season. It's very insular. So, yeah, but hang on to that, Danielle. Hang on to it.
I think we kind of needed it to be a little more standalone because Willow coming back is such a big deal and so much light has to be shed on what's going on with her right now. Not that they probably couldn't find time to do this, but I also kind of don't mind that it was kind of the Willow show this episode. Speaking of which, so Xander, Buffy, and Dawn go meet Willow at the airport. And Xander's got his cute little yellow crayon sign, "Welcome home, Willow." It was really awesome. But she doesn't show up. And I just wanted to know if you guys kind of figured out ahead of time that something else was going on there, because I see there's a note here that says the scene's close attention to that family coming off the plane was a clear indication that something was going to be amiss from the very beginning, because it was so random, which is true. It really does follow these like random people. And you're like, all right, why do we care about this guy in the orange shirt?
Yeah. It was like their mics were turned up, or like, it was like, they weren't just ambient noise. Mm-hmm. In scenes like this, you usually get the ambient noise, but like they focused on this family and even cut to like the faces of the family members. And so I knew something was going to be strange. I didn't know what was going to happen, but I knew that that was signaling that like something was going to go off the rails.
Yeah. The framing was very specific. And so that's always kind of the tip off too. But it turns out that Willow was there the whole time. She just can't see her friends and they can't see her. So she goes home to the Summers house and kind of walks through it alone and everything. And I know there was a note in here before about the fact that Willow is going back to Buffy's house, that she kind of lives there still. I mean, we don't know that for sure at this moment, but she's clearly going home to Buffy's house. Why Buffy doesn't lock the back door, I don't know, but that's beside the point. So yeah, how do you guys feel about that? Do you think she deserves to live in Buffy's house?
I think that her parents probably deserve to know that she's an evil murderer.
Where are her parents? This is true.
We've had a little bit of her parents like 5,000 years ago, but like, it's very like, this show kind of suffers in the way that Karen, for example, Teen Wolf never did, in that these kids have these insular lives that, like, you know, like, and when you start digging into the realism of what do these people do when they go home every day, like, to their parents, like, is really neglected for, you know, especially in the high school era. But I guess maybe she just doesn't have a good relationship. Maybe they threw her out because she was a witch and her mother tried to burn her at the stake. I don't know. Who knows?
All fair reasoning.
But if she did have that, that's the thing. If she had gone through that trauma with her parents of like being disowned or whatever, surely that would be a part of like her story that informed her character. Like, you know, like, oh my God, this girl's being kicked out, you know, this girl's, you know, really upset about it. You know, obviously we got in Hell's Bells that, you know, dive back into Xander with her, you know, with his family and how they influenced him to feel about his life. So Willow really never had that, but I don't know.
Yeah, like, are we supposed to carry that one scene from season one or two about her mother through the whole series and just assume that that's the way it is? It would make more sense if we knew that she had no other option but to go directly to Buffy's doorstep and, like, have to face whether or not she's going to be taken back. She can't ease into it. She just sort of has to, like, bite the bullet and go right in. There's no, like, slow, oh, I'll just come over for lunch type of thing. Like, with Tara, where she was coming back slowly after they broke up, it was sort of just assumed that she had to go straight back there.
Yeah. And I actually really liked all of this because I think Willow is being very decisive and being very brave to kind of come back the way that she is. I mean, she goes to the magic box and she meets with Anya and, you know, she's like, oh, hi, Anya, like, nice to see you. No, I'm definitely not evil now. Where are my friends? And Anya kind of starts telling her stories and she's like, yeah, okay, but where are my friends? And it's this sense of like, she really doesn't want to have to confront them, but at the same time, rip off the Band-Aid. And she knows that she has a lot to make up for, but she needs to get started on it. And Willow in the past has kind of walked away from her problems and swept them under the rug. And this new leaf she's turning over, I'm really impressed by it.
I definitely liked her better in this than you know, I have in quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
Like her actual personality, but I don't know.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think there was something about this episode where she was just more likable. And one of the things I kind of pointed that to was like her speech patterns were different.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, she was not speaking in broken sentences and like tremors. She was speaking like calmly, full sentences. And I think that kind of made the difference for me.
I'm going to say something that's really, it's really not good, guys. It's, I need you to strap in and be prepared. And I just, I feel like we've danced around this. But given Willow's past and given her relationship with power and the fact that she's so obviously primed to abuse it, I feel like I only like Willow when she's insecure and not when she's confident. And I feel like that's kind of not a good thing to say about anyone, like, at, like the wider implication of that, the wider implication of, you know, oh, that we, you know, judge women more harshly when they, you know, stand up and act confident and don't apologize for themselves and stuff like that is really bad. But with Willow, I just sort of can't help it. Like, I just, and I think that's probably because we know what her confidence leads to, maybe. but this is a shift as well, because this is like, because there's like really not confident, you know, like really, you know, apologetic, you know, shy Willow. And then there's like building in power, cocky, nasty Willow. And then there's this, which is kind of more, like, she is very worried and insecure, but, you know, very conscious about why. And so it's, like, finally come to the balance of her, I guess, being careful about herself. And her concerns are pretty founded. Like, they're not irrational or annoying or anything yeah. like that. So
she's a very arrogant person, and I think that, you know, when she has that confidence, she's very arrogant, and I think her arrogance got checked in a huge way, and so she is finding more of that balance, especially because, like, she's super insecure because of everything that happened, and she's worried that her friends aren't going to like her anymore, but also she's still practicing magic, so she's still got that confidence and that power inside of her. And I think if she can keep walking that line, hopefully the people who haven't really liked Willow in the past will see the kind of person that she's turning into now.
Yeah.
And before we get into the actual plot of the episode, I want to touch on Anya a little bit too, because we learned that she's on Vengeance Demon probation right now. And it's because she's not really doing her job in the way that she should be doing it. And it's because she doesn't really like vengeance, believe it or not. It makes her feel pretty crappy. And so we're seeing more signs of humanity in her. And I don't know about you guys, but I really like that. I don't like when Anya is cold, and I like it when she can be part of the Scoobies.
I loved Anya so much in this episode.
She was great.
I really, really yeah. loved her.
So hopefully we have good things to look forward to with that. But okay, let's talk about the plot of this episode, because we find out that there's this demon out there who's skinning people alive. And, of course, this was, like, handmade for Willow coming home. A little contrived, but, like, I don't know. The monster of the week is pretty awesome at the end of it, so, like, I kind of don't care. But they all find this dead body, and immediately all of them are thinking that it's Willow. And, I mean, that's actually totally fair. You can't really blame them for thinking that, and Willow doesn't at the end of the day, which is pretty cool. But because they can't see each other, they keep crossing paths at the body and when they're in the basement with Spike. But they can't talk to each other, and so therefore they're both kind of trying to solve this problem on their own. And on the Xander and Buffy side, Dawn is coming in and being really helpful. And I think that season 7 Dawn right now is, she's definitely pulling her weight for the first time.
She's the best.
She's a dream. I'm obsessed. That turning point in the finale of that conversation that she and Buffy had in the hole, it's like a beautiful awakening. Like, it's, this character is so fantastic now, and I just love her.
Brittany, how do you feel about Dawn right now?
She's fine. I'll talk about this in my favorite scene or whatever, but she is being useful and not just in a sarcastic, I guess I'll watch the house kind of way. She's actually finding ways to make herself useful. And I think that feeds off of the first two episodes of this season where Buffy, you know, she's sticking around the school and she is watching over Dawn, but Dawn still does have her own life and she needs to look into things and be observant and know the threat and never let her guard down. And she's embracing that. And I just like that she's, you know, not becoming Willow using the computer in a way that was kind of irritating, but just knowing where her strengths are. She can look things up. She can create a database, make their lives easier. She can find a way to be useful instead of just complaining about not being useful.
And this is what I liked about the season 6 finale as well, because Dawn has been watching her sister for years in her mind, obviously. And she's picked up on things. Like, of course she would notice the things that she's noticed, and she'd know how to go through the books, and she'd know how to do a roll and pick up a sword and all of that. And even if she hasn't been trained, she's been paying attention. So for me, all of this is very logical, and I'm glad that Buffy, both the show and the character, are kind of feeding into it now and helping polish that up, because she could be useful, as she proved in this episode. Spike is also useful because he can smell blood.
Oh my god. This reveal, or not the reveal, but like when Buffy says it and then Dawn gets it and Xander doesn't. Oh, it's Xander's so just, good.
It is.
So funny.
Oh, poor Spike. I felt like Xander in that moment. I had no idea what they were talking about.
It was pretty funny. And I mean, I haven't been on for a while, so I just want to throw it out there that, like, crazy Spike. I mean, I don't like it because I feel really bad, but like, I mean, James Marsters just kills that. And like, it's just such an interesting thing going on right now, and paying attention to all his ramblings and what's real and what's not real and what it all means. It's just, I don't know. I really like it. So this was both hilarious and also sad and kind of useful at the same time. But they both end up at that cave at the same time, and we do figure out from Dawn, actually, what this monster is, and it's called Gnarl, not the Gnarl, just Gnarl.
Just Gnarl.
And I will have to say, I love this monster of the week. I think it's so creepy and gross, and its little, like, finger clicks at the beginning of the episode, I was like, oh, man, here we are. We're back again. And the way that it peeled the skin off of Willow, it's so gross.
Okay, stop. Stop. I don't want to talk about it.
Sorry.
Anything, like, piercing skin, I get just really not great with. And I was not expecting him to have the time to just, like, go to town on Willow. I thought that they would have, like, helped her before that. And when that started, I thought I was going to pass out.
Oh, my
God. It was so gross.
I was freaked out when, like, his mouth went down to, like, lap up the blood from her stomach, because, like, I kept thinking of, like, zombies eating guts and stuff. Like, that really grosses me out. But, like, the skin didn't really look like skin, so I wasn't too bothered by it. But I mean, either way,
it's nomming on it, like, he was eating it like spaghetti and just
slurping it up. It was pretty gross. I don't know, Brittany, what'd you think of it?
I liked him in the sense that of his, like, taunting, like you said at the beginning, with, like, the clicking, and it was very sing-songy and creepy. But then I didn't like that, we were kind of talking about this earlier, but we kind of flew through it, that everyone pinned this on Willow. I was like, do you really, like, no one, how are they going to take her back? Like, that whole scene with Buffy was so undercut at the end just because everyone was like, oh, well, Willow definitely did this, so she's back and she's evil and she didn't finish her training. And that kind of frustrated me throughout the whole episode, even, like, right away, where they were like, oh, she's evil, she didn't finish, oh, no. Like, what did this is new training. Like, it's not like she gets a certificate printed out at the end, and they're like, well, you're cured, good job.
And, like, you would think Giles would know what he's talking about. Yeah, but, he's the smart one.
Yeah, well.
But look at what happened. They're afraid, you know?
Yeah, they didn't think
Willow could do this to begin with, and then they did, and now it's kind of hard to get it out of their heads. So
I think the suspicion is reasonable. Like, they know Willow's missing, and a skinless man comes, like, you know, and I think it and it's kind of, no one's, like, jumping to, like, you know, hate and accusation. Everyone's just, like, super worried. And I think the concerns are somewhat valid.
Fair, but I don't.
What did you guys think about her invisibility, like, when she came back, when they kind of started existing in, actually, in the same place? Because I don't know that they ever necessarily explained it. Like, I know that Willow said she was the cause of it, and I think a lot of it came from Anya being there, being like, oh no, like, they came back, they're here for you, that sort of thing. But it's not like they said, okay, this is how it happened and this is why she started existing again.
I think it was sort of talked about in, like, different pieces of dialogue, but my understanding of it was that Willow was just not ready to see her friends.
Mm-hmm.
And she lost control of her magic and magicked herself invisible.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, but yeah, she kind of subconsciously blocked them from each other because she was so nervous. And it's when she realizes that, you know, they don't blame her, and that they didn't lock her in to get eaten with a demon on purpose, and that they didn't, you know, that they are actually there trying to help, that, you know, she has the, you know, confidence, or the spell shifts because she is, you know, relieved.
Yeah. And, I mean, we also have to point out what this means, that Spike and Anya were able to see her. Clearly she's more concerned about what the core group has to say about her than the others.
Well, just kind of shitty also that both, they're not part of the core group.
That's not how I read it. They're both supernatural.
Well, fair. Okay.
The others are human. Because that being said, she was able to talk on the phone. You know, she called Britain and they picked up, and she's not, like, not existing. I think it's just those three, which does put another pebble back in that it's only them that she's the most concerned about. But Spike and Anya, I definitely thought was because they were supernatural, but maybe not.
I thought that too, because they were supernatural, that they saw her. But I also thought that it, like, she might have not existed, because the way that she picked up the phone and tried to call Giles, like, she touched the whatchamacallit, like, the button that clicks when you hang something up, like, she touched that button and then waited 5 seconds and then started talking to someone as if they were, like, close to Giles. So it's like, oh, well, maybe she's not real because she's not using a phone properly.
I didn't notice that.
These little things just stick out to me, and, like, the use of phones did. So that's what got me confused as to, like, who existed, who didn't, who was invisible, right, who wasn't.
Yeah. Well, Willow was real. She became visible. And at the end of the day, everything was pretty much happy. I think Dawn's still working on some stuff. But, you know, Brittany, you were saying that the final scene is kind of undercut in a lot of ways. And I don't necessarily disagree with you, but I still really love this scene, mostly because Willow says something close to, you know, you're the Slayer, you have to be the one who's thinking about all of these options, you have to wonder if I'm going to go evil again. That is literally your job. And that being said, Buffy still trusts Willow. She still sits there and says, I'll give you some of my strength so that you can heal faster. And I think Buffy wants to believe Willow is good, but her instincts are also going to constantly be telling her to be careful, be careful. And the fact that she did this for Willow was kind of a huge step forward.
I liked it. I thought it was a well done scene. And again, it endeared me towards Willow because she wasn't like nervous and speaking strange. Like, she was very relaxed, understanding of her surroundings. And I thought that that really worked well. And I think it was in this episode, sometime earlier, someone was like talking about how everyone just needed to ask for help more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Dawn.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really liked that scene of Dawn's where she, you know, she's like, oh, well, we're blaming us. Giles is blaming Giles. Is anyone going to blame Willow? And they're like, what? And she's like, no one's actually saying what they mean, or like saying, you know, saying that they need help and stuff like that. And I really liked both that statement and Dawn's, you know, acknowledgement of the culpability of Willow, but it not being a mean thing, it being a, you know, problem with the communication or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. And I thought it came back. It felt to me like it had come back in this final scene with like helping each other. Like, Willow didn't outright ask for the help, but Buffy kind of knew, and hopefully that'll help with the help down the road. I don't know. It just seemed a full circle moment to me.
Yeah, that's cool. Speaking of Dawn, let's jump into our favorite scenes, because I didn't get the memo that all of our favorite scenes had to be about Dawn, but that's fine.
MVP, mine's about Spike. MVP.
Mine's about Spike. I really love the scene where Spike is talking to both Willow and Buffy and Xander in the basement at the same time. So well done. And even in the beginning, like, he's crazy. So you think he's talking to, like, whatever he's seen before.
Yeah, you really don't suspect it until you see it the second time around.
Then it switches, and you're like, wait, I need to pay attention to literally everything he's saying, because it's weird how it fits or doesn't fit in a certain way. And, yeah, that scene was just genius. I thought it was really great.
Very, very well done. I would have picked that one if you hadn't already got it, because it is so well done. Like, the initial conversation with Willow could just be crazy Spike talking to no one, and it's really only when you see it the second time round that you're like, oh shit. I'd like to see, I wonder, there must be a version, someone like splicing it together, like, so, you know, you can see, you know, like, Willow on one side and Spike on the other. But so if anyone wants to try and find that, I'd be interested. But yeah, it's William. Yeah.
But instead, you picked which Dawn scene?
The first scene in the airport where, you know, they're kind of casually inquiring about Xander's yellow crayon sign, which Karen thinks is super cute, and I thought was, well, I mean, the sign is cute, but it was lowered, in my opinion, by the fact that Xander is keen to keep telling everyone how awesome he is at saving the world. And I loved Dawn's trolling of him here, like the, like, completely straight-faced, casual, oh, like, yeah, tell us what you said again. And he takes him a minute to realize that they are making fun of him. And Dawn leading that was just so funny to me, and so, like, there's not even an ounce of sarcasm. Like, she gets him so good. And I was like, yes, because he, like, once again, to me, is diminishing his value by doing the opposite of what, you know, we just said with Wesley. You know, he's putting out his hand and wanting acknowledgement for his achievements. And anyway, I don't know. You know, he did a good job, but I love them absolutely slaughtering him for that in that way. It was very funny.
Danielle, what's your Dawn scene?
my Dawn scene was just all of the moments with her being, this sounds terrible, all the moments of her being paralyzed. like when Anya asks, like, how is she paralyzed? and then starts, like, posing her. And then end, they have her sitting up on the couch with, like, her hand kind of raised. And Anya doubles back and puts her remote in her hand. She can't do anything with it. Like, she can't even watch TV. But she's just, like, sitting there with her remote. Yeah. I really enjoyed that.
I like when she fell off the couch after, too.
I liked all of her talking through her teeth and how sassy she still was when, like, you know, yelling at them through her locked mouth.
Yeah. So good. What about you, Brittany?
Mine was when they were running around and she keeps talking about just wanting to build a database. She's like, we can catalog teeth marks and goo types and all sorts of stuff because she's finally going to do something and have a purpose.
Yay. All right. Favorite lines. Mine is from Anya, and it's when she says, here's something you should know about vengeance demons. We don't groove with the sorry. We prefer, oh God, please stop hitting me with my own rib bones. I just love the picture that Anya can paint with her words. She's so good at it. What about you, Natalie?
So, mine was also from that scene between Willow and Anya, which was when Willow is asking them to, asking her where everyone is, and Anya's talking about the high school, and, you know, Willow is not really listening to Anya's problems, but she's like, yeah, whatever, whatever, where do you think they are? And Anya said, oh, at the new high school, probably. Everyone's all about the new high school right now. Buffy's got some kind of job helping junior deviants. Spike's insane in the basement, and Xander's doing construction there on the gym. And Willow's like, what? Spike's what in the whatment? And Anya goes, insane, base. And Xander does construction, blah, blah. I just, like, roll straight through that. I love this quote so much that I used to have a username on LiveJournal that was insane_base. Like, that was my, like, I've had several Buffy usernames on LiveJournal, one of which is pertinent to the finale, so we'll get back to that.
I know way later. That is.
I had a secondary account that was insane_base because of this scene. I don't know why, I just found it so funny. And yeah, I really, yeah. That's one of my ones that I've been, you know, holding out for to get to.
It's a long time to hold out for it, but it's a good one. Yeah. All right, Danielle.
My favorite line was Spike, and he's referring to Xander, and Spike says, I'm insane. What's his excuse?
That one was actually my favorite because I love those, like, moments of clarity with Spike where he's like, dude, I'm totally crazy. So great. And Brittany.
Mine is when Willow's regenerating her own skin and Buffy comes in and she's like, that's magic, right? I mean, when most people meditate, they don't get extra skin, right? Because Clem should, like, cut back.
Oh, shout out to Clem. All right. Well, as usual, if you would like to get into contact with us, please email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter at re_watchable. Find us on this post on hypable.com or visit rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. We also love iTunes reviews. If you rate us 5 stars, it really helps us out. And if you rate us 5 stars, then I will taser your devil son for you, free of charge. All right, we've got a couple pieces of feedback here. The first couple are from Twitter. Natalie, will you take this first one?
Yeah, first tweet. Laura Morrow. Buffy 703 remains one of my favorite episodes of the series with such fun Willow stuff, but also a very great Buffy and Willow scene. Yes.
I don't know that I would describe it as fun. It's quite sad, but I get the sentiment. It is a good one. And Brittany, will you read this next one?
Sure. Renee Pope Monroe at Ren in Oz says, not sure how the host got the impression that the writer's room was in the habit of rewriting Joss episodes. Opposite was more frequently true. Not saying his writing's always on point, but the most deaf scenes are very clearly him. Weird that the reverse seems to be your impression. And I think that this tweet was in reference to our discussion last week about the church scene where Spike, like, is rambling and, you know, not making sense. And then he lays himself over the cross and he says that, like, can we sleep now? And we were saying how there were two different versions of that scene. And
yeah,
Joss rewrote it. And that's the one that was filmed. And we all agreed on that. So, yes, Joss rewrote the writer's room, not what you think we said. So I'm not sure.
I think this actually might have been on me. Because I think I was surprised that they were rewriting, or Joss was rewriting them instead of them rewriting Joss. Because in my mind, like, he sometimes does not understand the characters. And so, or like his writing to me sometimes seems a little off. So I think I had said perhaps in my mind that I thought that they had rewrote him more. And I was surprised that this was the other way around. I think that's where this is coming from. Okay. So I think it was me, and if it wasn't, I will take responsibility.
Well, as punishment, you can read this hypeable comment.
Okay. This one is from Jessica Caravan. And she says, the only scene in Beneath You that I really don't like is Spike fighting with Anya. I understand that with his new soul, Spike is still really trying to grasp morality and what is right and wrong. And with Anya being a vengeance demon again now, that probably made Spike think it's okay to stop the situation from progressing with violence. And since he's still a vampire, his natural violent instincts likely agreed with this assessment. But I still don't like it. Thankfully, the church scene makes up for it. Such an amazingly well-acted and performed scene.
Yeah, when he hits Anya, I was like, oh, not good. Not good. Do not like this. Even though she is a demon and can clearly take care of herself, it did not sit well with me either.
No, and like, they were so close.
Yeah.
Biblically, even.
I was going to say, yes, they were quite close at one point. all right, let's jump into the final part of our episode, which is Brittany's brainstorms and Danielle's deliberations. We've got Angel 402 coming up, Ground State, and then Buffy 704 Help.
The first thing that popped in my head for the Angel one was the elevator thing.
And Wolfram and Hart.
When was that? Yeah, the Wolfram and Hart, like, elevator where he was, like, taking him to hell and then ended up taking him, like, back to, like, the normal world. And, like, the word usage of ground here, like, made me think of that elevator and, like, hell being on Earth. I don't know. That's kind of where my brain went.
I thought of him grounding Connor.
That was the second one.
Also fair.
Yeah, so elevators are Connor. We'll see what happens. With Buffy, I'm hoping that we kind of get to see Buffy in the school now that, like, Willow's back. And, you know, we haven't really seen her. She went to, like, her office that first day. But we haven't really, like, seen her in action too much. So maybe someone actually needs help. I'm not sure what kind of help she can give, but I'm looking forward to seeing how she tries. Maybe there's a demon.
There's always a demon.
There's always a demon. That's the lesson of Buffy.
Yes.
Yeah, I couldn't think of anything, so I think yours is probably close.
Cool. Well, we'll wait and see next week. And until then, thank you for listening. I'm Karen.
I'm Natalie.
I'm Brittany.
And I'm Danielle.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.